speak tonight about this word vipassana, which gets translated as insight. It's called insight meditation. And I noticed that in our community, the insight part doesn't actually get talked about that much. We talk a lot about meditation, we talk a lot about concentration, we talk a lot about the breath. So I kind of wanted to fill out this terrain a little bit tonight. And in particular, try to connect it and relate it to this particular moment on the planet and in our country. The kinds of changes that we're living through and the uncertainty that we're facing as a species, as a nation. The reality as we know intellectually but often forget emotionally and somatically is that the future is unknown. And there's a lot of unknowns today, seemingly more perhaps than there were a few decades ago in terms of where we're headed on the planet and what life's going to look like even in our lifetime. So what does any of this have to do with meditation and particularly with insight? So as I kind of alluded to in that guided meditation, generally we talk about this path, this practice, as having two main parts. There's the steadying and calming and collecting our attention, otherwise known as shamatha meditation, calming meditation, sometimes talked about as concentration meditation. So this is about stopping. It's about stepping back from things, slowing down, and gathering our resources. Now, unfortunately, this is the part that gets emphasized to the exclusion of the whole second part of the path, which is about what you do once you've slowed down and stopped, which is to look deeply, to actually investigate and come to understand ourselves, one another, and life in a different way. So stopping is very difficult to observe something if you're running around, right? If you want to learn about anything and literally your body is going from this place to that, or your mind is jumping from this thing to that, it's really difficult to study, to learn, to observe, because there's too much movement. There's too much motion and commotion and distraction. Someone want to let her in? That door's locked. So we need to stop, we need to slow down, gather and collect our resources if we want to understand or learn anything. It's just a simple natural law, right? Now this slowing down, this stopping and gathering of our attention has a lot of benefits in and of itself. It's healing. Many of our lives today are a little bit crazy, just trying to get by in a neoliberal capitalist society where there's no safety net is stressful. And we've got to keep a certain amount of energy and momentum going to make sure that we've got a place to sleep and got food on the table and have some way of getting health care if we get sick because no one else is providing it. I mean, there's a lot to keep going. So just having the capacity to actually step back from it all, even for a few minutes, and catch your breath. Oh, man, what a relief. It doesn't solve all that stuff. Doesn't mean you're going to be able to get the health care you need, right? Or have a place to sleep if foreclosure is looming or you can't make rent this month. But in the moment, in that little space, it brings some respite to the heart. It's like we sleep every night for 6 to 8 hours because our body needs rest. And so in the same way, our mind, our heart, our spirit needs some rest. It needs a break. It needs to be able to step back, turn things down, and replenish. So this first part of the path of calming meditation, concentration meditation, is about rejuvenating. It's about healing, coming to wholeness. And that's beautiful, and we all need that. And yet, if that's all that we do, right, it's not enough. And I want to draw a parallel here and say, on the personal level, it's not enough. Right? Because we can still keep suffering in our life. We can still keep making poor decisions, hurting the people we love, getting ourselves into problems, stressing out unnecessarily, turning to substances to numb the pain. Whatever it is that we do that's causing us pain, right? If we don't actually deal with that, and we use the meditation as an escape, we're not actually dealing with the issue. So on the personal level, this calming, slowing down, stilling the mind is helpful, it's nourishing, but it's not enough. We need to go one step further and apply the power of the mind to look more deeply and understand. Why do I keep getting caught here? Why do I keep getting into these relationships with those kinds of people who can't actually show up or who hurt me? Why do I keep getting into debt, running up my credit card bill? I've been through this twice. I know where this goes. Why do I keep getting caught? What's happening? Whatever that is, whatever that pattern is. So we need to start to look deeply. So insight is about understanding the process of our life. And it's about understanding this on different levels. It's about understanding it on the personal level. These kinds of things I was just talking about, our personality, the ways that we struggle and suffer, where that comes from, how to shift it. But it also means understanding ourselves and our life on a deeper level, on a level that's transpersonal, it's universal. It's not about me or you. It's not about having this particular gender or age or skin color or religion or sexual orientation. All of that has meaning and reality. All of that is particular to us, and we live in our own skin, in our own history, in our own society. And yet, we all bleed when we're cut. We all mourn when we lose things. We all die. That doesn't change. How do we deal with that? What do we draw on when it comes time to say goodbye? What can we take with us when we leave? These are the kinds of questions that the Buddha Dharma is designed to address. At the deepest level of being human, in a world of change and mortality, what is it to be alive? How do we find meaning? How do we find peace? That's what insight does. It helps us to see and understand more clearly the nature of this life, our mind and our body, what this thing actually is, so that we're not operating on false assumptions. And that starts to change the way we live. So instead, I wanted to draw a parallel. I'm going to make the connection now, and I'll come back to it at the end. So on the personal level, if we just do the calming, slowing down and stopping, it's not enough because we don't look deeply and start to actually apply that power to understand ourselves and our lives. In a similar way, doing this meditation practice without engaging with the very pressing questions of our time is also not enough. The whole point of the meditation is to live with purpose, to live with integrity, to have a sense of wholeness and a deep connection with the rest of life on the planet. And that doesn't just happen by itself. We actually have to look. We actually have to apply the mind and ask the difficult questions. So for me, I ask myself every day, what does it mean to be a straight white man in 2019 in the United States of America? It's not a question I have a complete answer to yet. But if I'm not asking the question, I'm not getting anywhere. So this is insight. It means looking deeply. So how do we practice with this? On the personal level, and then towards the end, maybe looking at more on the collective level in terms of our society, our planet, where we're going today. So what is insight? Let's start there. What's meant by this word vipassana? So in this word comes from the Pali language. Pali is it's the Latin of Buddhism. So Latin's a dead language, no one speaks it anymore. Pali's a dead language, no one speaks it anymore. But the Pali language was created to preserve the teachings of the Buddha. So it's the language that the texts were written down in. So this word pasati or pasana means to see, literally to see. And the prefix vipassana, means something like intensely or completely or precisely. So this is where you get this translation, insight, seeing very clearly, seeing very deeply in a penetrating way. So insight is a shift in our perspective. It's that moment of aha, eureka. Right? Who was the Greek philosopher who got in the bathtub and figured out
Archimedes,
right? He's trying to figure out volume and displacement. He gets in the bathtub and the water goes out and I got it. Right? So it's that shift in perspective that happens suddenly. One teacher talks about it as like magic, in the sense that the understanding that arises has a quality of wonder to it. Like, wow, look at that. And there's a sense of uplift and release that comes when we see something more clearly. So as I was saying before, these insights come on all different levels. On the personal level, why do I get so reactive anytime someone in a position of authority tells me what to do? And then all of a sudden we recognize, oh wow, that's about my dad or my mom. That grandparent, and we put it together and we get it. And then it also comes in terms of our personality, our personality patterns, in terms of our life, different things that are happening. So for example, I remember sitting one meditation retreat in my early 20s when I was feeling very lost. I didn't know what to do, where I was going. And for those of you who have sat in meditation retreat, you know what it's like. Sometimes it's really boring, and you're just sitting there watching the breath, and breathing in, breathing out, and just same thing over. You know, I sat down, and you know, the practice, we're bringing this quality of a fresh, open awareness, trying to meet the moment clearly. So sat down, okay, just starting over, you know, just what's happening right now. And in that moment, there's that shift. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, I'm really afraid. I'm really scared. I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I don't know what I should be doing with my life. That's what's been going on. It was right there under my nose all the time, but I wasn't really seeing it. So that's a kind of insight into our life. We also have insight on a deeper level, on a more universal level, into what it is to be human, what it is to be alive. I remember the first time I had an insight into the nature of thinking, that thoughts aren't who we are, that we don't have to obey every single thought we have. Again, it was right after a meditation retreat, which is a very potent time for insight. Whether it's a one-day retreat or a 10-day retreat or a one-month retreat, doesn't matter. You take some period of time, and you call, even a sitting period, after your meditation, that's a really important time to pay attention. Because whatever the length of time is, you've just cultivated a certain amount of mindfulness. And the way insight arises is through the continuity of mindfulness. We can't produce insight. We can't make it happen. But we can increase, we can create the conditions and thereby increase the likelihood that we see something in a different way. So when we meditate, when we sit and walk and stand, we are strengthening mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, this capacity to stay with experience and see clearly, moment to moment to moment, so that the possibility of seeing something differently in one moment can arise. So whether that's 45 minutes or 45 days, afterwards, when you move back into your life, what happens? I gotta feed the kid, I gotta feed the cat, don't forget to pick up the kids, we're out of milk, right? The mind starts going. All the duties and the stories and the patterns come back. But what's different is you've got a little bit of momentum. There's a little more awareness in the mind. So that's a great time to start to see the functioning of the mind and body more clearly. So this was just after a 10-day retreat. I was back in my apartment, sat down on the chair in my room, and, you know, just finished meditating for 10 days. So there wasn't that, like, continual pressure, but we had to do something next again and again and again. So just kind of sitting there like, all right. And then this thought, well, I guess better clean my room. I was just about to get up and start kind of compulsively cleaning my room. I'm a Virgo, so I like things neat and tidy. And just as I felt that energy of like obeying that thought that was telling me I should clean the room, something inside clicked and recognized, wait, that's a thought. I don't have to clean my room. If I don't want to clean my room, do I really want to go do that right now? Had I not seen the thought, boom, I'm off cleaning the room, living out that reality, obeying whatever thoughts happen to come into my mind, believing them. So in that moment, the conditions were right to see the arising of the thought just as a thought. And then that's it. It's a thought. I can choose to follow it or not. One of the hallmarks of insight is that it applies to a much broader realm of experience. So once you've seen one thought clearly, you now understand all thoughts in a different way. Once you've seen one emotion clearly, you now understand all emotion in a different way. Once you've seen your own anger clearly, you'll never relate to anger in yourself or another person the same. You may forget, but as soon as you remember again, as soon as awareness returns, anger will never appear the same because you've seen it as it is. It's an energy. It has the nature to arise and it has the nature to cease. And when we don't know that, it pushes us around. Once we see anger clearly for what it actually is, protective energy in the body, a gathering of energy in the heart, we can choose to follow it or not, depending on what's useful. Once we've really seen that clearly, it shifts the whole relationship. So insight arises when the conditions are right, when there's a continuity of awareness, we've been paying attention, and something shifts. Now, one of the key things here is that these insights aren't something new. It's not that we're creating something. We're seeing something that's always been there that we just keep overlooking because we're so busy, because we're not paying attention, because we don't know where to look. And this is one of the great gifts and beauties of the Buddha's teachings, is that it points. It tells us where to look. It says, try paying attention in this way and see what you notice. So one analogy is so I grew up on the East Coast, where we have more dramatic seasons, right? So in the summer, everything is really green and lush, it's like here in the winter, in a certain way, when it rains. Everything's green and lush, and the leaves are on the trees, and if there's a forest, you can't see, because there's so many leaves. It's a deciduous forest. And then in the fall, all the leaves change color, and then they fall off the trees. And in the winter, when all the leaves have fallen off the trees, you can see through the forest, because there are no leaves in the trees. That's a little bit what insight's like. All of the things that have been blocking our vision, and it's not so much even really a seeing, it's more of a knowing. But all of the things that have been blocking that capacity to know and see clearly fall away. Our obsessions, our constant thinking and planning, our ideas and beliefs and assumptions. As some of that starts to fall away, we see and experience life in the moment more clearly, just as it is. So it's not that it's something new. It's always been there, we just haven't seen it. In order to see a thought clearly, there needs to be a certain amount of silence in the mind, a certain amount of quiet and stillness. So you can hear that sound really clearly, because there's a certain amount of quiet in this room. This room was super noisy. There were music blaring and other bells going and people talking in a cocktail party, and I go like this. And you might not even hear it because there's so much interference. So our minds are like that. Thoughts and reactions and memories and plans ricocheting, bouncing off each other, tangled in webs. It's impossible to see a thought clearly because there's so much noise, so much going on. So again, this stilling, slowing down, stopping, gathering the attention, and then applying it, looking deeply, investigating. We see something clearly because there's enough space and stability in the mind. So how do we do this? How do we actually practice with this? Most of us know how to engage in that first stage of the meditation path of calming and steadying the mind. Even if we're not good at it, we still know how to do it. Right? Just come back to the breath. Just keep coming back. Or if it's sound, or if it's the loving kindness phrase, it's very simple. Right? Whatever happens, just let it go. Repeat again. That's the concentration. So how do we practice this vipassana, this looking deeply? So what I love about this practice is that two things. One, as I've been saying, you don't have to do it. It's not like we have to manufacture insight. So it takes the pressure off. Because it's not a pass-fail kind of thing. It's just put yourself in the game and see what happens. Second, there's a lot of room for creativity. We can really explore. And that's what it's about. It's about exploring. So you think about, what does it mean to explore? What kinds of qualities are required to explore, right? Well, you got to be curious. There actually has to be some intention to go and poke around, right? You have to be willing to go into the unknown. It's not exploring if you're just walking around your bedroom in circles. You know what's there. What's it like to go in the attic? Or down in the basement? Where the light's broken? What's it like to open that box that you haven't looked at in 10 or 20 years? So to explore, we have to actually venture into new territory. That takes courage. That takes energy. Right, so these are the qualities that are necessary for vipassana, for insight practice. Interest, curiosity, courage, energy. We need mindfulness and concentration. We need a certain amount of trust or confidence that there's actually something to explore. That it's worth going on the journey to try to see what we can see, to know what we can know. So So there are different ways to practice with this. I'm not going to cover all of them, but I want to share a few. Some of this will be a review for some of you. For others, it'll be maybe something new. So the first and perhaps most important way of practicing insight meditation, this exploration, is this one particular quality that gets translated as investigation. The word in Pali is dhammavichaya, which means something like looking into things. Dhamma means things or qualities. Vichaya is to take apart, observe. So looking into things. So this is a particular angle. It's a particular way of relating. So I'm going to give you a couple of examples so that you can connect to what this quality is, because we all have it. It's natural. We all know it already. So one of my favorite analogies, so if you look over there in that corner of the room, you'll see some flowers on the table. Right? So from where most of us are sitting, we probably can't tell if those are real or not. Now, we can just appreciate the beauty of the flowers, the color, the shapes. Okay? That appreciation, that dwelling, that's a little bit like the calming meditation. We're just enjoying it. We're just being with the beauty of the flowers. We're resting. Now, if you want to understand, if you want to know, are these real? What do you have to do? You have to get closer. And what else do? Right, you approach to get closer, and then what?
Just your senses. Use your senses.
You use your senses. What senses do you use? What do?
Smell.
You touch it. You smell it. You look at it really closely, right? To see, you look for signs. Does it have a fragrance? Are there those little plastic bumps on it? How does it feel, right? So you study it really closely. With a particular quality of intention, right? There's a question in your mind. There's a very specific kind of angle that you're looking. Right? You're not just looking yellow, seeing yellow, green, brown, smelling, right? Noting what's happening. No, you're trying to put the pieces together. What is it? Is it real? Is it fake? And then what happens? At a certain point, what happens? You know, right? You figure it out. The data comes together all of a sudden, right? There's a moment where it shifts, and it's like, boom, I got it. They're real. Or they're fake. And then you don't need to look at it anymore. You don't need to study it anymore. The question's been resolved. That insight has arisen. Why? Because you studied it very closely. You weren't thinking about your grocery list. You weren't thinking about whether or not you did your laundry today. You gave all of your attention to the flowers with this very particular kind of inquiry, of investigation. You weren't wondering about the scientific name of the flower. You weren't wondering who got them and how much they paid or where they were grown or what the environmental impact was of them. Those are other questions. Those are not relevant. In this moment, you're wanting to know if they're real or if they're fake. So the mind kind of gathers around that one very particular way of looking. What is this? That's insight. That's insight practice. That's this quality of investigation. Looking really carefully and closely with all of your attention and senses, examining it from every angle to try to understand, what is this? What's its nature? We do the same thing when we're trying to read another person. Who is this guy? What's his deal? Is he safe? Is he trying to pull one over on me? No, he's just being nice. Is he being nice? Right? We're investigating. We're kind of reading the data, reading the signals, waiting, feeling it out, trying to get enough information until we get a feeling for it. So this quality of investigation is something that we apply in the meditation when the mind is calm and collected enough, to any aspect of our experience, thoughts, sensations, emotions, memories, moods, intentions, impulses, any aspect of our inner world of experience can be studied closely with that same quality of attention and investigation. So this is one way of practicing insight meditation, and as you can see, it's really broad. You take that quality of investigation and you can look into anything. Look into the breath deeply. Look into the experience of hearing deeply. The beautiful thing about the Dharma is that the universal truths that are revealed can come in any moment of experience, because all experience shares the same nature. Whether it's a sound, a sight, a smell, a taste, a touch, a thought, or a feeling. All phenomenal experience shares the same characteristics. They're impermanent. They come and they go. They're incomplete. They don't really satisfy us in a lasting way. Whatever it is, because it changes, nothing really does it in a final way for us. It never gets there. It's never over. It's never done. There's always something else. That's the nature of the world we live in. That's called dukkha. And nothing exists independently by itself. There's no such thing as a thing. Everything's a process. It's all a flow of change that's related to everything else, including our own mind and body. Nothing exists independently. Everything is in relationship to everything else. So whatever you observe, even if it's some petty thought about wanting to go get a bag of chips, doesn't matter. It's still got the same nature, which means it has the same potential to reveal the truth of this existence, to open into awakening and enlightenment. It's the quality of attention that we bring to the moment of experience that matters. And this is radical. This is a radical shift. This says that our deepest freedom, our deepest fulfillment and understanding comes not through getting what we want, not through manipulating and controlling the circumstances of our life, but by how we are approaching and relating to what's happening. That in that orientation is the possibility of a different way of being and a shift. So another way of practicing insight is to begin to observe from these particular angles. And there are three in the Buddhist path. This is the way that the Buddha points and says, try looking in this way. Try paying attention to this. And the first is change, transience, inconstancy, impermanence, anicca. So we can observe experience from the perspective of change. At any level. So right now, this particular group of people has come together on this night in this place. We will never be together again like this. For right now, these conditions have come together. Within about 20 minutes, it'll start to break apart. So I invite you right now, set an intention to observe change. Let's see if we can all remember, myself included, when I ring that bell at the end of the evening, to notice the process of change as this particular Marin Sangha event begins to dissolve and disintegrate. Everything comes together, and then it dissipates. It disintegrates. And we can observe that coming together and disintegrating. So this is on a much more broad scale. Right, we're talking about 90 minutes or 2 hours of time. You can notice change when you meet a friend. You get together, you say hello, that's beginning. You spend some time together, you leave, you say goodbye, that's an ending. You can notice the change as I'm speaking. Each sentence begins and it ends. There's a word and then there's silence. That's the process of change happening right now. We can notice the change in our breath. An in-breath comes into being, it lasts, and then it stops. An out-breath begins, it lasts, and then it ends. So we can observe change at all these different levels. Whether it's the change in one lifetime of being born, living, and dying, the change of the day, waking up, living, going to sleep, of a meal, beginning, eating, finishing, anything. Even a thought, beginning, lasting, ending. Very quickly like that. So we can develop insight by looking from this perspective. Notice change. Notice how things are changing. Keep observing that. I remember the first time I noticed the way that sensations change in a very direct way. I was standing holding the railing on a staircase. And that perception of the railing being solid and my hand being solid and I'm holding the railing just started to dissolve and break apart. And there's just sensation changing, pressure, hardness shifting every moment. The whole thing was just a mass of sensations changing. Right there. Quote, before my eyes. I wasn't actually seeing anything, but feeling it. It's no longer the railing that my hand is holding, but just this whole little like microcosm of sensations changing. So we can also study dukkha. We begin to observe the incomplete or unsatisfactory nature of life. There's plenty of this around. You don't have to look very far in our own life or in the world. Right? From the pettiest, like, you know, suffering of, I don't know, your cream was spoiled when you poured it into your coffee. Right? There's the disappointment. Right? There's things not working out. That's the way it goes sometimes. To thousands of children being locked in cages at our southern border. Right? Doesn't mean we don't care. It just means we open our heart to the reality. This is the world we live in. There's pain. There's suffering. Things don't work out. Can we open our heart to that? Or do we turn away? Do we pretend? Do we avoid? Insight develops by observing, by looking, by meeting, by feeling, by being with the truth of things. And when we start to see clearly what's happening, something shifts inside. We begin to be disabused of our assumptions and expectations. Whether it's the myth that my life should keep getting better and better, I should keep getting healthier and healthier and happier and happier, and if I'm not, I'm doing something wrong. Good luck. Or the myth of this, you know, the myth of this country, the myths of the United States, the beautiful ideals that the United States was founded on, but the myth of their reality. Right? You look back at our history and you see blood, oppression, slavery, genocide, theft. That's insight. That's seeing clearly the reality. Right? The reality that the wealth of our nation was built on the backs of slaves. The wealth of our nation was stolen from the people who lived here before us. That's the reality. We have to look deeply. We have to be willing to face the suffering of that, to see it, to let it in. We don't like to see that. We don't like to see change. We like stability. We don't like to see suffering. We don't like to see that things are incomplete. We want everything to be nice and happy and all tied up in a bow at the end like a Hollywood movie, right? That's not life. And we can look with the perspective of anatta, non-self, that everything is dependent on everything else. Start to recognize that who and what we think we are is not actually so. That nothing really exists on its own. Once you do this with one thing, you start to be able to do it with anything and everything. I remember the first time I had an insight into anatta. I was standing outside, and I felt the wind. And then in that moment, I noticed that there's no wind. Wind is a thought. There's sound. There's pressure. There's tickling. There's coolness. There's this whole constellation of changing experiences. And then this overlay from memory of a concept that comes in and says, that's the wind. I know that experience. But wind itself doesn't... There's no such thing as wind. It's just this changing experience from the direct relationship of it, from the direct experience of it. So this is another way that we can develop insight, is regarding experience from each of these perspectives of change, of dukkha, the challenges, the incompleteness, the pain, the difficulties of life, rather than running away from them. And of the interrelated nature of things, that nothing stands on its own. There's one more way we can practice with insight that I want to mention, and then I want to kind of close by bringing it back to this question of more collectively how our practice can be relevant and inform what we're doing in our lives. So the last way that I want to mention tonight is something that we did in the guided meditation, which is using questions or contemplations. So you can invite a certain question into the mind and the heart when things are quiet and still enough. They don't have to be perfectly still. But when there's some stability and clarity inside, you just introduce a question. Maybe you're embroiled in some really difficult situation with another person or at work, and you just can't get clear. Like, what's going on here? Why am I so riled up? So maybe you sit, you quiet your mind, and then you ask yourself, what's this about? You just drop that question, what's this about? And then just listen. Listen with that quality of investigation, of just being really right there to hear and sense and receive whatever comes, thoughts, images, memories, feelings, all of it. Just listen. So you can do this with anything, any question, any topic, any area. What's needed? Who am I? What's my purpose? How do I respond? This is not about intellectual analysis. It's not thinking about. It's a very deep, quiet listening to sense what's true. And then you let the wisdom of your own heart or the wisdom of the collective reveal something to you. So this practice of insight meditation individually helps us to understand our place in the cosmos. That each of us is just here for a short time. And that all the things that we get so caught up in just come and go. And that they're not so unique and personal to us. And that gives us more space, gives us more balance, gives us more compassion. We start to live with wisdom, with the understanding of the nature of things, instead of running around confused and deluded, chasing after things that will never really deliver. trying to control things that are ultimately beyond our purview. Trying to build up a false sense of self that in the end we can't hold on to anyway. But the house is burning. And if we're not asking that question, if we're not turning our attention there, what are we doing? So this insight practice is meant to be applied in all domains of our lives. Not just internally, not just with the particularities of our own heart and mind, but with our society, with our communities, with our planet, with our country, with our systems, with our institutions. And none of us can solve all of it, we know that. And no one of us can solve any of it on our own. But the point of this practice is to give us the resources to look clearly. And when we look clearly, to have the wisdom to know how to use our energy. The gifts and the energy that each of us have been given. What are we doing with it? So I invite you to take your practice and really use it. Ask the hard questions. Whatever that question is for you. Right, so for me, I'm really struggling, really grappling with, you know, what does it mean that the place that I enjoy in our society, the fact that I have a place to live and I can buy food and I can take a week off and go somewhere, that those resources and that wealth comes at the expense of others. Historically and today, that the whole system that we live in, the whole economy, is set up to funnel resources from the many to the few. And that I'm somewhere along that funnel. I'm not at the top, but I'm way far ahead of a lot of others. What does it mean to be in that system? And how do I act responsibly? And I don't have the answer, but I'm asking the question in a deep way. What does it mean to get on a plane and go fly somewhere to teach Dharma when our planet is cooking and the life support systems are coming apart? And if I'm not asking that question, then I'm not practicing this path. I'm not living with integrity. And I wouldn't be able to ask those questions if I didn't have the interest, the curiosity, the commitment, the courage, all of the qualities that we cultivate in this practice. So it's said that this path, that this practice, is for the welfare of ourselves, for the welfare of others, and for peace. That when we practice it fully and properly, that it leads to great benefit for ourselves and others, and that it leads to peace. But we need to know how to practice it. We need to know how to walk it, how to apply it, to not just use it to numb out, to make ourselves feel more comfortable. So thank you for your kind attention. I hope it's been useful.